He was first arrested on the 7th of December 2010, just 7 days after WikiLeaks started publishing Cablegate, and he's not been a free man since. And his health, his physical health and his mental health are obviously deteriorating, because he's only a man. He's a fighter. He's a strong person, a strong-willed person who believes in the work that he's done, and the he's aware that this is a fight that against a monumental injustice. But there's only so much a man can take.
Stella, since we've spoken, you had applied to be married, the two of you. The prison forbade that and then reversed their decision. And today, as you stood outside the new court ruling, you said, "Today we won, but Julian continues to suffer. Julian must be freed." Your final 10-second comment.
Well, you know, Julian, for every win that we get, Julian's situation doesn't seem to change. And this is punishment through process, and it has to end. The Biden administration should just drop this. We shouldn't have to be taking it through the UK justice system, because this is a political prosecution that was initiated by the Trump administration, and it is causing ongoing harm, not just to Julian,
we
not
have
to just
leave it
to
there.
Us.
Stella Morris, thank you so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is KBOO Portland.
Are you a fan of the independent film news and interviews on The Film Show? Well, you won't want to miss the new and expanded Words and Pictures, coming in 2019. That's right, The Film Show and Words and Pictures are coming together to fill the airwaves with the most creative happenings and fertile minds in screencraft, stagecraft, comics, and animation. So tune in to KBOO twice a month, 11:30 a.m. every second and fourth Thursday in 2019 and beyond, for the very best of the narrative arts on the new Words and Pictures.
Back home, boo.
You are listening to KBOO.FM 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and KBOO.FM via the World Wide Web.
Today, you do that so well.
Okay. Today is Monday, the 24th of January, 2022. And this is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott. And the other voice you heard is...
That's Celeste Carey joining my cohort in conversation. Yeah. So how's everybody doing? You ready for that frosty environment there this morning?
Yeah. You know, I got up this morning and said, oh, it is wintry weather. And, you know, you... saw the frost all over the place. So at least here in the Rose City, it was, you know, appropriate, because it is January. So
you know, and how soon we forget that there's supposed to be this, I don't know, what would you call it, atmospheric phenomena called weather.
Yes.
You know, we forget about that. We're so used to wanting things on our own. We're so tired of things not being the way we are used to, so I guess tolerance level has gone down. But I've heard uncounted dismay, you know, incredible dismay from folks. Oh, my God, it's cold out here. How could it be cold? Well, enough of that.
It's sort of like, I'm the center of everything, and everything's supposed to be just like I want it, when I want it. And,
how I want it and as much as I want it.
And I think that's part of the challenge we face. We, you know, earlier on on the news report was talking about climate change and how it is impacting different communities in the South Pacific, and all of it is related, I think, to humanity's desire to create a world that we want and not thinking of the consequences. And so our children suffer because of our greed.
Well, okay, that is reality. But I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. We're not going to start out on quite, I don't want to say pessimistic, but yeah, you know, kind of a clear-eyed assumption, or summation. I don't want to say pessimistic. That's why I'm trying to struggle here, but I'm going to give that up. What we are going to talk about is something that I found really interesting. I was reading, and I found this article about things that that different generations just don't understand about each other. And I thought, we deal with a lot of heavy-duty things. And let's work on some of the things maybe that get in between and around and block conversation and make it a little bit harder for us to understand and connect with each other. And that could be, for example, generational misconceptions or generational concepts of each other that don't really help, and they seem to hinder. And here's a good example of one, and this is one that you heard, I think, as a piece of friction between people known as baby boomers and people known as millennials. Okay, and it was you know, when I went to college, when I had to walk uphill both ways in the rain, in the mud, in the snow.
Snow, yes.
You know, up to our nether parts. I went to college and I paid for it myself because I worked. I had a job and I worked. And I managed to pay for college. And I had four roommates, and we lived in this house, but because we cut the grass for the landlord, it wasn't so expensive. And you know, somebody who is a boomer would feel justified in making this statement about the reality of life, you know, because that's the way it was maybe for them. Somebody who is within this millennial generation may look at the boomer and go, I have no idea what you're talking about. There are no work-study jobs like that anymore. I can't work and go to school because I'm not making enough money, and when I tried, I was flunking out. I have to choose between having a job maybe that, you know, prior to COVID, y'all, did not pay, but it might have paid $10 an hour. I don't know. Might have paid a lot less. And I can't live four people in the house because there's zoning issues and the landlord won't give you a discount for that grass. As a matter of fact, landlord won't fix anything. So how could we do that? It's not going to work.
Yes.
And so, you know, we have a lot of misconceptions about what life is like for each other that get in the way of conversations. But some of them are really funny. Some of them are funny. So I thought what we do today is just talk about some of the generational differences. Now, I really want to invite my younger callers to call up and share with us more of the issues from their perspective. And maybe even issues between the millennials and the Generation Z, or Zoomers, as some people call them, you know. And I use these terms affectionately. I'm not being derisive, divisive, any of that. It's just, you know, the terms we give each other. But one of the things that I don't think millennials would even get, and this is a very simple thing, is having to remember phone numbers. What's your phone number? You know, and most people, they might remember their phone number, But for many of us, if we lose our phone, if the screen goes blank, if you can't control it, and you have not committed even one number to memory, you're in trouble.
Very much so.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the your mobile device is attached to your hand, and you know, if, as you suggested, if it goes blank or something happens, you lose it, then you are in a place of trouble, not knowing where to go. You know, something you were mentioning about the experiences, the life experience of baby boomers, and let's not forget, you know, you jumped from baby boomers to millennials, and we're forgetting all about the forgotten generation, Gen X.
I thought I was supposed to do that. I was following the cue.
Oh,
I messed up. Doggone it.
Gen X and then millennials. But
well, and then we'll see, there's the boomers, the Generation X, you know, our kids. Then there's the millennials, their kids. And then there's the Generation Z, the millennials' kids.
Right.
So, you know, we all have these differences. And I just like, I want to shift gears because I know we're going to have some rougher topics coming up. And then we have another one that is the heavy duty one. And that's the article you sent me some weeks ago about, and I've given this a lot of thought. And y'all might be mad at me because I buried the lead, but this is how it goes. When we look at culture and the challenges we have, even within generations of communicating, however could we expect to communicate across racial issues? But I got this interesting article from Cecil and I read it, and I thought, this is kind of interesting. I want to talk about this. And that is, and the title of the article is simply, Can We Ever Really Be Friends with White People? And I gave that some serious thought, and I have a statement about it, but before we get to the statement that's going to set it up properly, I want to give the phone number, 503-810-7380. Oh, but whose phone number is that?
No, that's
it's right up on my screen. 503-231-8187.
We do have a caller waiting.
I think I had a senior moment there.
Yeah, some sort of moment. Hey, let's see if Corey can help us out here. Good morning, Corey.
Good morning, Corey.
Good morning. Thank you guys so much. I'll be brief. I know that Celeste is a veteran like myself. And so when you were talking about the education thing, I know for me, I used the GI Bill. And it was interesting. I remember working at the university I was attending, working in the library, and I had my GI Bill, which allowed me to have my studio apartment, my scooter, and some groceries. And I thought I was living the life. Like that to me was, that was awesome. You know, I had my little studio, and it was a great life. And so the other day, you know, I'm up in Seattle and I work with somebody who they have student loan debt, and they were asking me, well, you know, do you know anything that I could do? I'm like, well, I mean, from what you're telling me, you know, you have your degree, you could join the military and, you know, get some of that debt paid down, and because you have your degree, you could be an officer. And they looked at me like I was insane. And I'm just like, you know, you asked me a question, I'm thinking like, you say you want to travel, and I'm like, and I can tell you, I'm not telling you to join the Army or the Navy, Army or the Marines. I'm telling you, you might, you know, want to join the Air Force, or you might want to join the Navy. Like I said, you could go on as an officer. They looked at me like I was insane, and I understand this is another generation to where, you know, the military still is for a certain quote unquote type of person, but yeah, it just seemed very foreign to them that they would ever do something like that. And I tell people, like, regardless of how progressive I am, I'm still an American, and I did still serve in this military for 3 years, and you're looking for options, so I gave you that's just an option. You have other, you know, you got the Peace Corps as well, but it was just the way that they looked at me. They actually took their mask off and looked at me with this disgusted look. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. I do think that there should be something to do with student loan debt, but I also think, case in point, like I have a friend from Israel, and you know, they served 2 years, and I have a friend from, same thing with South Korea. So I think that, I don't know if America will ever emulate something like that. I don't think that it should, but I think that it's an option, but the fact that the revolt, the revolting look to where, how dare you, I went to the University of so-and-so, how dare you tell me to join the military, was sort of shocking. I kind of get it, but I'm like, well, you know, you got to pay this debt back somehow. I'm telling you, you could, you know, do a couple years and pay it back that way. But just the sort of look of revolt to where I don't have that look. You know, I'm still a veteran, but I find that to be sort of interesting with this new generation. I get it.
Well, let me suggest as one who chose not to go the military route, I think one thing that we forget, and I think you mentioned it in passing, is in terms of student debt. Those of us who were able to go to school in the 60s, 70s, 80s were able to get student loans for a very, very low interest rate. I was speaking to my cousin yesterday. She mentioned how she went to the State University of California, and, you know, for a term, her tuition was very, very small. And I can't remember, you know, I went to a private institution and had lots of debt, but my interest rate was sort of like, I don't know, 4%, 5%, 6%, and mm-hmm. it was something somewhat manageable, and able to pay it off. Now, those who are maybe Gen Xers and millennials and younger, you know, student debt is such a big load that they are carrying now that it's impossible for them to see how they will manage getting out of, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of debt. It's
the other thing too we got to remember is education costs so much more than it needs to.
Yes.
And nobody really talks enough about that. When we talk about some of the challenges that generations behind us have to endure, education is expensive. But then you stop and you think about it, you know, there's four or five pillars to middle life, middle class. Home ownership and education are two of the most fundamental. And then, you know, then it goes it goes for your job and a few other things. But if you tackle the security that you can get and change of income earning status by making education too expensive, then you can pretty much guarantee that anybody who is not upper middle class is not going to get a good education and therefore not a good job, and, you know, mission accomplished. And too many boomers, you know, well, I would like to think that's not true, but I have heard too many times it said that you got to work harder, you know, get a school, I mean, a job while you go to school. There are no jobs like that. Not anymore.
And you're right, and it's also highly geographic. Like, and I'll be brief again. Like, my sister, she has a PhD. She works in Texas. She has a home with land, and I keep telling her, you know, move to Seattle, move to Portland, come to the Pacific Northwest. And she's like, well, why? Because I'd have to trade this for a condo, mm-hmm. even though I make well over six figures in Houston. That's not six figures translating in Seattle as a condo, maybe a townhouse. So I think you're right. So what they're also doing is pricing, even if you get a PhD, you become a lawyer, you're still getting priced out. And we can have that discussion. I was in Portland the other day, and just seeing how the gentrification is still affecting that north side is still really shocking to me, but there's nothing being done. So no, thank you so much for the conversation. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for your call, Corey.
And very interesting. You know, one of the goals of the Biden's administration are those who were working for a change in administration was to have a considered appeal to try to do something to get rid of student debt. And there continues to be the call for its debt forgiveness, which the administration has yet to take up on in terms of that cry. So there still continues to be a need to look at student debts and how that is stifling many, many young young adults and prevent them from even thinking of achieving the American dream. And that's why we living in our parents' basements.
Well, you know, something is really interesting. You know, one of the things that we talked about is this accumulation of debt. And then there's the tangential issues like, well, what kind of financial institutions do we have to help us manage our money on a consumer level? And credit unions have been friends to many people, yet and among millennials and Generation Z consumers and people, they're less likely to bank with a credit union. They're more likely to go with a national bank. And that's frustrating in many ways because credit unions have been such a big help to a lot of communities because they're rooted there in the community. They help increase your purchasing power, and they help stabilize the community by keeping the money in the community. But big national banks and international banks seem to be the way to go. And you would think that after the lessons learned with Wells Fargo, that wouldn't be the case. Now, if you look at some of the financial apps that are popping up, you'll see that there are some that purport to help you save money or reduce your debt or to increase your credit score, but some of those are not protected. And I wonder if that has something to do with it, but that's just one of the things. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, and we'd like to think of ourselves as a knowledge bank, as an information bank, as a place where you can express and exchange your ideas the same way you cash in your pennies for dollars, you know. But speaking of being a bank, don't forget that your Community Connection also needs your community support, your financial support. Don't forget to support us and keep us strong. You can go to our webpage, www.kboo.fm, and you'll see a place where you can become a member, donate, and support us. Please do that.
And in the meantime, let's go to our next caller, Cody. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil and Celeste. You guys are sounding well this morning.
All right. Good.
Generation X are here. I had I knew both my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky enough to have lots of cousins. I come from that generation from the East Coast below the Mason-Dixon line. My grandmothers told me a lot of stories concerning the Depression. And they helped me basically formulate that what we all go through has a great deal to do with economics.
Mm-hmm.
And how a lot of us don't live long enough to go to experience these trends to actually know what's going on. I kind of feel sorry for the generations that came after me because they don't really understand that Huckleberry Finn thing insofar as dealing with life without all of the gadgets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they're not as prepared for. Let's just say that they would have to reinvent the wheel all over again if it ever came to that point. I'm all for the future, but I also understand that as a result of these economic seasons, our lifespans aren't long enough, and a lot of people aren't really paying attention to what's going on around them. And now we have disease that are coming in, and the millennials who are coming in, and they're like the gentleman earlier, Corey, said when he told them that, you know, you might want to think about joining the military, everybody kind of like their faces wrinkled on them. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, both sides of my family, one side of my family was in the military, and the military side did much better than the side that didn't go to the military. And both sides of my family were African-American descended slaves. You know, so I thought that was interesting insofar as economics were concerned, how one side of my family did really good. Well, at least they were able to live a decent middle class lifestyle. The struggle wasn't bad, and when a lot of them retired, they did well for themselves. And the other side didn't go to the military. Now, I'm not pushing the military. It's just that I think a great deal with that, if the economic situation becomes dire enough, the same people who were wrinkling their faces up about joining the military might change their minds.
So a question I have for you is, why is it that the military remains the only option to get out of the financial stress that people find themselves in? I think to question the system enough to say, well, why is it that that remains the only option? And what type of society are we building when we say that either you be part of this great war machine or you don't succeed?
Oh, yes. I got one sentence for it. I think inherited wealth have a great deal to do with it. And most descendants of slaves who had to deal with all of these programs that was basically keeping a foot on their neck realized that the only family member that could help them make it up one step in society was Uncle Sam. My father fought in Vietnam, and he was actually able to give his children a middle-class lifestyle, as opposed to people on my mother's side of the family, who did not go to the military. The men specifically, and I guess the women too, they had to struggle because they did not come from money. I mean, it comes from a different time to where everybody had a house, but it was like when push came to shove, no one was fighting over the estate because there was no estate to fight over. You know, so Uncle Sam was a black people's family member. They inherited wealth. Well, if you want to come on to the GI Bill, you want to get loans, you want to get extra points on your test for employment, let's say at the post office.
Exactly. You know? It was a cachet of influence or points, as you said. And I think in many ways, just having that kind of an option is an asset that boomers have that a lot of the other generations, they don't even understand. And it's unfortunate that they don't have as much of a cachet to draw on as we did. But that was the way society was set up. I was going to say one more thing, too. Being in the military was not necessarily the first choice. As a matter of fact, I may have been in the military and my siblings, but I put my foot down and I did not want my grandkids to go.
Yeah.
Because the world has changed and you're much more complicit in some of the more negative things that this country has done and its empire overreach. And I just didn't want them to be subjected to that and to the erosion of their morality, assault on their morality for having to possibly hurt people. But also it was the racism inside the military, because I had my being ground to dust. It was not a good place to be,
Yeah. I've heard a lot of stories from black servicemen in Vietnam on the front lines who they told me some very interesting stories about the things that went down in there and how they were able to resolve their race issues in a foreign country, as far as Vietnam was concerned. Very interesting stories. So I don't want to get too much into the military, because my whole point is economics and how economics is going to affect all of this, and how I was able to look at from my bird's eye point of view. Wow. And for a long time, I had the same question that Cecil asked. Why is that the case? It took me a while to figure out, because there are a lot of secrets that are being kept in this country concerning inherited wealth. And until we actually have a serious conversation about these secrets that are being kept. And I say secrets because there are a lot of people who are hiding that inherited wealth and who are acting like they're on the side of the people who they're fighting for, and they might be kind of protecting their inherited wealth, but no one talks about that third wealth. So I don't want to really hold you guys up. You probably have other callers, but I just wanted to put my two cents in, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you so much for your call. And you are listening to More Talk, More Talk Radio. Radio. And it is KBOO FM.
You know, we're talking about the differences between generations, and I also wanted to kind of keep it light, like I said. Here is something that has something deliberately, a very direct, rather, connection to where we are right now. We're listening to the radio. Something that millennials and Gen Zers will never know or not have to experience is what it's like to have to wait listening to the radio for hours to hear your favorite song. To hear a song that just set your world up on fire. Maybe you could find the record. Maybe you had a record player. Oh. But you couldn't just hear the song on demand like you can now. And if you could find the phone number to the radio station and call it, they might be busy. The phone line would go, You couldn't get the call through. And then if you did get a call through, you might not get the air room, or they might say, yeah, we'll play it. And then you don't hear it for 2 or 3 hours.
And at the meantime, you're sitting there with your fingers on the tape deck waiting for the song to play so you can record it. So, yeah.
You know, and we talk a lot about technology and the changes that that it's making, both in terms of our lives, the quality of our lives, the connections we make in our life, or even how we see ourselves. But to think that you were so involved in hearing that one song to get that endorphin rush, you're hoping you can tape it off the radio and get it be a decent quality so you still got that endorphin rush when you played back the tape. That's something that young people would never understand. They couldn't see what is the point of hanging out and nothing else. You couldn't do anything else with your day. Not really.
Well, related to that, you mentioned in terms of radio, this old type of communication is sort of like you in terms of watching programming. And I was going to say television program. This is like before you could record programming.
Mm-hmm.
And so something came on at a certain time. And so you had to make sure that you, in front of the television station, and this is even before like recording devices or programming, so you have to see it live to be a part to experience that. So with some people watching the Beatles on Ed Sullivan in 1964 was an event that you had to be there in front of your television camera, in front of your TV screen to experience it. You want to see a movie. Remember, this is something that millennials will experience. Remember when you had to go to rent a movie and you had to make sure that perhaps you rent it, you go to a video rental shop on Friday to make sure that you could get a copy of that movie that you needed to see. And if you were lucky, you were able to rent it and you and your friends watch it on your TV screen and return the tape to the video rental place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Blockbusters, remember those? What is that?
Yep, I came across one of my cards, and I might have even a couple of movies I bought for them. You know, but I all of the things that we experience different like that, they don't have to be barriers between us. They can be bridges. One of the things that I really found interesting, and since both Corey and Cody spoke on this, I do want to mention a concern that boomers had that the millennials don't. And that this is a blessing, and that's the fact that we also lived our lives under the shadow of the draft. And the draft is something that I think a lot of younger people would not only would they not relate to, because the military has been seen to be not the viable option, you know, the people tried to scream and holler that it was. Oh, yes. Join the military, go to exotic places, go meet exotic people, you know. And now they say that, but they say, and then kill them, you know, because that's the perception of our military. There's nothing benign about it. But living under the shadow and the concern of the draft was something that really kind of dampened a lot of people's moods, because as you became old enough to have to sign up for it, it might limit your options. Now, some people felt proud to serve.
And again, this is only those who were early to mid baby boomers. Those born after 1956 did not have to live with the fear of the draft.
Right.
I remember, you know, I shuddered, you know, about the draft and what I would have to do or would not do, and I wasn't one who wanted to join the military. So for me, the concern was whether to register for the draft or to flee the country. Fortunately, it ended before I had to make those decisions. But those who were born earlier than I were wrestle with those decisions and how that might impact their families. Choices you had to make. Certainly, the military, the draft, which only men experienced firsthand, was something that many people lived under and that people of subsequent generations in the United States have no experience of.
You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. The show in effect at this moment is More Talk Radio with Cecil Prescott and myself, Celeste Carey. While we are talking about generational differences and how we perceive each other, we threw out this topic, and I think we might have to come back and address this one again. Because it has to do with something that Cecil and I had considered doing on MLK Day, but instead I think we had the body-worn camera guest on. But what we wanted to ask our listeners of color is, can you ever really be friends with white people?
And this is reference to an article by Touré, who is a writer, podcaster, which was in The Griot, January 14th. Can we really be friends with white people? Yes.
And I think that's a good question as we juggle both of these topics. I came up with a thought, and I want to throw it out there. I thought, yes, you can, but it's not about necessarily being friends with white people. It's about how do you address white culture. Because I have white people who are my friends. And by friends, I mean, if I fall down, they'll come pick me up. I'll just put it as plainly as I can. If I can't get to the doctor, if I need some gas in my car, I'll say this jokingly, because Lord help me if it ever happens, I'm pretty sure a few of my friends and family members would kick my butt, but if I get in jail, they'll come bail me out. as long as there's no table dancing involved, they'll come get me out. But, you know, it's people take offense sometimes when you don't let people deep into your life or your heart. They feel by virtue of being a human being, you should be willing and able to do that. And I think it's really important for us to dig a little deeper in this conversation, when what we mean and how we can establish those relationships. You know, how deep are you going to let folks in your heart who are so different from you? And this is when I look not necessarily just at a person's skin. I look at the culture they're coming from. Is the culture that they're coming from one that values me? How do they express their understanding of their culture, you know?
Yeah. Toray begins his article by saying, it's hard being friends with white people. I mean, being really close,
mm-hmm.
to where you really let them into your heart of hearts. We as black people love to talk about the cookout in terms of a fictional place where black people can come together and be comfortable. But when we mention the cookout, it's usually a chance to introduce a white person who's cool enough to be invited to the cookout. We're saying that white person is so down with us, we be comfortable with them joining a black space. Well, being a friend with whom I share real thoughts and deeper feelings, where I take off my mask and keep it 100.
100.
It's like coming to my personal cookout. I'm sharing my food, my affection, my respect, my spirit. No one can hurt you more than the people who get the closest to you, and I can't have any white people at my cookout who would ever say something that would make the needle scratch. I can't have someone enter my heart and then disturb my peace. When I think about the white people I truly love, and there are several, I know I can truly trust them. But it's hard to get there. And then he points out several hurdles in the article. For one thing, he says, after we're really close, like after I take off my mask and get real, I can't be asked to debate certain things. To be a real friend,
yep.
We must be simpatico on the core issues. On the core issues. Oops, I just lost my place. On the core issues that guide my blackness. For me to be close to you means I can trust you. Trusting you means when it comes to the most crucial architect of my political life, you get it. To be my friend, I have to know that you're on my side, that you're an ally, that when the race war breaks out, you'll be like, nah, I'm helping the black people. There are many things I'm happy to argue with my friends about. Was that a great movie or not, really? Is the Democratic Party going in the wrong direction? Is Kanye insane or genius? Is the GOAT Jordan, Kobe, or LeBron? But there are some things
Hey, what about Serena? What's going on?
But there are some things I will not argue about with people who want to be considered real friends. I believe that systemic racism is a central part of the American history and its present. And it's a huge part of explaining why black Americans are where we are. I believe that critical race theory and the 1619 Project are crucial and accurate ways of looking at American history. I believe Black Lives Matter is an important and valuable movement. I will not debate these things with people who want to be my friend. Either we can be friends or debate these issues, but it can't be both.
Mm-hmm.
Second.
Go ahead. I was going to say, so this is some of the criteria that sift through our minds when we're looking at how close we have to be. Now, to skip through the article a little bit, Torrey also says you can't be oblivious. You have to understand what white privilege is. It doesn't mean you have to constantly apologize, you know. But you have to be aware of what it is and be willing to run interference when you see it being unethically, unfairly applied, you know. He also says that interracial friendships are not necessarily the key to a better future, but we need to recognize that any kind of alliance is going to have some kind of balance in terms of economics and power. You know, it's not that we need more white friends. We need more friends. We need more political and economic power to narrow the gaps and the differences between us. But we need more people who are willing to come honest, heartfelt, transparent, looking for the well-being, working for the well-being, doing for the well-being of others who don't have access to white privilege or generational privilege or educational privilege or economic privilege, whatever it is. You know, you want people who are willing to work for those who don't have all those opportunities.
He says, I admit I enter into any potential friendship with a white person with my guard up. I've been hurt by white friends before. We started moving toward a friendship, and then they say or do something that broke one of these rules and forced me to put a distance between us. I've had white friends brag that about being better at basketball than me in a way that struck a nerve. As if I'm supposed to be better? Because? I've had white friends ask too many blackness 101 questions that, while they meant well, also made me feel like they saw me as a black in a way that made me feel otherwise. I've had white friends who I had to bite my tongue around because I knew they wouldn't understand certain things. It's just take a tiny amount of that for me to downgrade your status in my life. Now, he says, I don't believe that interracial friendship, as you said, Celeste, are the key to a better future. Black people don't need more white friends. But what we need, more political and economic powers, we need to narrow the wealth gap, what we spoke about earlier this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So in these interactions, what's essential is for me or any other black person is to maintain our inner peace, the inner calm and stability that allows you to be your best at home and work. If you can do that well, including white people in your inner circle, then great. But you should feel no guilt about imposing a steep boundary between being kind of sort of friends and being close friends, because your close friends have to help you protect your peace.
Like I said, bail you out of jail.
Yeah.
At 3 o'clock in the morning. And then ask you, both serious and tongue-in-cheek, was table dancing involved?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, the question is not asked to be divisive or to build a wall or to divide anyone. It's asked because it gets to the heart of what our relationships are going to be about. And like Therese said, it's about also trying to keep that inner peace so that you can be the best person that you are. And so when we talk about things like things that boomers had to learn that nobody else seems to understand, or things that millennials or Generation Zers have to address that boomers will never understand, we're looking at how do we tear down these walls and build some bridges so that we can connect at a more honest, more real level, and we can not only keep inner peace, but really create inner peace.
Yes.
You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. And coming up at 9 o'clock, we have the Old Mo Variety Hour with news, views, and reviews you can use. How about that?
Hey, I like that.
And more good programming coming up, too. But, you know, we had Corey and we had Cody give us a call. And I'm always encouraged when I hear from folks of color Because that means that they see value and they see a stake and they see a and hear a resonance in KBOO. But, you know, as I also said, we look to build bridges because the world is not monolithic in any other way in that there's life. You know, we have life. And so we welcome anybody to give us a call. And we especially want to hear from people who are not part of our age cohort, you know, intergenerationally. And I'm always tickled when I get younger listeners calling in. And what's the phone number, Cecil? Because I can't be trusted. I'm giving out people's random phone numbers.
Random phone numbers, yeah. Who are you calling this morning? It's 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Plug in that number on your phone until you don't have to remember it. You just press KBOO. Because, as you suggested, who knows anyone phone numbers these days?
Well, you know, it's funny, you know, I'm laughing at that snafu, but here's a generational difference that a lot of boomers just act like is not real. And that is, when you have your millennial and your Generation Z travelers, they're more vulnerable to cyber security attacks than boomers, according to some online surveys. And I find that to be consistent with the fact that each generation uses technology a lot more, you know?
Yes.
But to have this vulnerability be kind of dismissed sometimes by boomers because they forget, just because you can live without TV or, you know, streaming services or, you know, cell phones with five or six different communication apps on them, including maybe one of them that goes TikTok and, you know, and another one that has an instant moment to its gram. You know, the thing is that, yes, life does include these. But because sometimes we get boomers calling, well, you know, I just don't do anything on those internets.
Right, yeah.
But it's a vital piece of life. And the truth be told, you know, a couple of months ago, we were talking about how prevalent AI is, artificial intelligence. And you might say, oh, I don't use any of that, and not knowing that you're using it all the time. Well, it's the same thing with technology. You know, more and more people listen to the radio, like with KBOO, on their computer.
Right. And listen to us when they want to. And so, you know, like we said, it is 8 a.m. on January 24, you know, a good portion of those who listen are not listening live. They're listening when they can, when they have time to turn on. And for, as you suggested, for as much as we try to resist it, slowly we'll be drawn in to adapt to these new ways of communication, of connecting with one another. It is something that we may want to resist, but, and we may approach it with a critical eye, and I think we need to, but in order to exist or to live or to communicate, I think we need the ability to be, at least be aware of those things and know what we will miss on if we refuse to engage in such new endeavors. So you are listening to KBOO FM, and this is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste.
You can call us. We like talking to each other, and we can talk to you, but it's more fun to talk with you.
It is. 503-231-8187. And talking with your grandchildren, Celeste, are they amazed by anything that you took for granted, or in terms of what you thought was necessary in terms of your how you lived or experienced life?
Well, I've got four grandsons, and I would say there are some things that, of course, they rolled their eyes at, you know, that I said or done, and you know, fortunately for me, I have my daughter to validate. No, you know, that really happened back there. You know, she did walk to school uphill both ways.
Both ways, in the snow.
In the snow, every day.
Every day.
Especially in the summer, you know. So she can validate that. But I think one of the things that again, what lubricates our relationship is just care and appreciation. I got one that's a knucklehead, you know, and by knucklehead, I mean, he prefers to see if he can blast his way through everything as opposed to negotiate it like water does, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Joshua is intent. He's intent on, hey, the quickest way through is just to blast through, which means sometimes he's not a person of finesse and nuance. But he's also a kinetic person in that you know, he learns through his physicality. And so, you know, I think the biggest difference between my generation and theirs and taking for granted is they still get on me sometimes because I'm not all over social media.
Mm-hmm.
Despite being a media person, being trained in using media, I'm just not all over social media. And I think it freaks them out because I still want to call and talk to them on the telephone.
Right.
Because I like to hear the voice. It causes a biochemical change in your body to hear somebody's voice.
You know, one thing that I think that we are living with is to understand how different communities, different generation choose to communicate. So, you know, something, you know, I look at my phone and I know some people, mostly older people, still enjoy an audio phone call. Other people only communicate by texting one another. Other people like to do a audio-visual call. So it's, you know, looking at that person that they're talking with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing I think we all need to do is try to understand how different people choose to communicate and to be comfortable with. Some people I only text because they don't like to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Some people I want a visual audio conversation, so I have to look at them and speak to them. And some people like the old-fashioned way, listen to a phone. And speaking of phones, let's see how Francis likes to communicate. Good morning, Francis.
Hi. I like to communicate however it happens, but I'm one of the old people, the people of the boomer babies, and I have a very young at heart attitude about things, and I do communicate a lot with younger people. And I think one thing that is common among all of us at whatever generation we are is that we appreciate the fact that the truth is what is, and fair is fair. And when the truth is revealed, anyone among us will realize that there need to be steps to reconcile the injustices that we have become aware of. And that will never change, whatever generation we are.
It's good to remember.
Yes.
All right. You all take care.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Frances. Thank you for calling.
You know, one thing I do want to say, even though we're sitting up here and we're talking about the generational differences, don't forget we're also talking about these are not permanent barriers. They should not be permanent barriers. It shouldn't be barriers. They should be things that we know about each other that helps draw us closer and find our similarities. But I will say that one thing that boomers do appreciate about both the, all the generations behind them is this increasing concern and awareness for many of them for those who are less fortunate. And one way that the generations have demonstrated that they are paying attention to it is by such dynamics as going online and funding each other's concerns, causes, and needs. And you will find that on social media, there is an outpouring by young folks to each other's needs. I have people, friends of mine, who have had some catastrophic health issues, and they went online and they took advantage of the crowdfunding concept, where they had lots of people help them out financially by giving a dollar or so at a time. And that is a monumental achievement that younger generations, I don't think, get enough credit for.
Yes. Well, you have been listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. Thank you so much for being part of this conversation. Stay tuned to, if you're listening live, to the Omo Variety Hour, followed by Locust Focus, and then on Native American Radio.
Your community connection, KBOO, Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KBOO along with your family and friends